You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock, a whiny version of Jason Whitlock.
Yes, you are.
That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Coming up, we'll tell you the one thing that might stop Patrick Mahomes from winning the MVP award.
Oh, chill with the inside jokes right here. And what to make of the latest Kevin Durant, Draymond Green news. But we start every day with a Whitlock. So what you got, whiny big dog?
Marcellus.
What?
You ever see the movie War of the Roses?
Yeah. Not too familiar.
It's basically a movie about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Danny DeVito plays a divorce lawyer who tells this absolutely crazy story about the divorce of this perfect couple, Oliver and Barbara Rose.
All right.
Oliver and Barbara met at an antique auction, fell in love, had two kids, and became ridiculously rich. Mm. They reached middle age, though, and set about destroying each other in a divorce. That's what happened in Pittsburgh. The Steelers and Le'Veon Bell were the perfect couple. Big Ben, Antonio Brown, and Le'Veon Bell formed a big three as dangerous as LeBron, D-Wade, and Chris Bosh. Hell, I put Ben, Brown, and Bell on the same level as Bell, Biv, DeVoe.
Whoa.
Now,
whoa.
Look at this divorce. It's the war of the Steelers. Look at this. The Steelers videotaped themselves raiding Bell's old locker. That's Bud Dupree taking Bell's Jordan brand cleats. This is the equivalent of coming home from work and your wife has packed up your belongings and thrown them into the front yard. You know, that's about my only memory of my parents' marriage. My mother stuffed all of my father's belongings in two trash bags and threw them in the front yard as he walked up the driveway.
Like that?
Anyway, that's what the Steelers did yesterday. Social media is the new front yard. This is how people used to publicly break up. Now people tweet and Instagram their breakups, and they gossip about it in the media. Big Ben told reporters that Le'Veon didn't respond to his text messages, and Ben admitted that he's glad he no longer has to talk about his ex running back.
But like I said, to each their own. Each guy has their own motives and motivations, and you know, I can't comment on him. I am glad that we won't talk about this anymore, though.
All right, here's the thing about nasty divorces. No one looks good. No one really wins. In the War of the Roses, Oliver and Barbara both die at the end. They're hanging from a chandelier in their mansion, and they fall to their deaths. Danny DeVito's character told the story of the roses to convince a potential client to work things out with his wife. DeVito says, when a couple starts keeping score, there is no winning, just degrees of losing. I don't think the Steelers are going to benefit from this divorce. Bell's contract dispute and long holdout served as motivation for the Steelers. James Conner's played over his head as he's tried to take advantage of Bell's absence. Let's see if he can maintain that same energy and production now that the job is his for real. Conner might be a different version of Linsanity. All right, ooh. Joining the desk now is Fox NFL analyst Greg Jennings and Hall of Famer Eric Dickerson. Marcella, let's start with you. Have the Steelers handled this divorce properly?
Properly? No, not properly. Poorly? Maybe extreme, but certainly not in their best light. This wasn't the best version of their character on display for us throughout this entire process. It wasn't a nasty divorce, as you said, because there wasn't a tug of war. You've been to that family picnic when you're holding one side of the rope, and boy, I hate to be on the other side of your rope. But I've been there too, Whitlock, and the other side just looks and says, I'm not going to pull. And then everyone falls down here, and that's the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were in a tug of war with a guy who wasn't trying to pull back. He just was sitting there on jet skis, hanging out in Miami, and then he trolled him one time by saying, let me go to Pittsburgh to get all my stuff, but I ain't gonna tell you why I'm in Pittsburgh. Oh, y'all think I'm coming back? Oops on y'all. And that's all I saw out of this. This was the cleanest divorce you can have in sports when you talk about a guy sitting out. This is not the San Antonio Spurs with Kawhi Leonard and that nasty divorce because they recruited every former player, ambassador of the Spurs, to go out there and talk bad about Kawhi Leonard. This was a situation where a couple old linemen talked trash. A couple guys said, I text him, he ain't hit me back. But from Le'Veon Bell's perspective, he's going to go out there, and that guaranteed team contract he already has, basically he's locked up. The only reason you'll do this with that type of security, that's going to be a win for him. And the Steelers got somebody by the numbers, that is actually doing a comparable job. It's a win-win, not a nasty divorce.
I totally agree in a sense. I feel like the Steelers win in a sense because they have James Conner under a real rookie contract.
Rookie.
They don't have to pay $18 million. They got a less than $1 million player, and he's producing. That's the big thing. I think, and also, it kind of takes the light away from Le'Veon Bell. The offensive line is like, look, we're doing this. This is why Le'Veon Bell is the guy he is. Now, don't get me wrong, Le'Veon Bell is a great back, but you have to have the guys up front. For Le'Veon Bell, I don't think anyone thought he would sit out and take $14 million, but the upside is he has a chance to make $50 million or $40 million. It's almost like, you ain't going to like this. You know, you're going to get on me by the money. You know, when I held out with the Rams, it was the same. I just wanted to make what I thought was fair, $1 million. Now, if that was $1 million. You're talking about $20 million. Mm-hmm. But he's doing what he thinks is best for him. And he don't have to take those hits on his body right now. But so, in a sense, he wins.
When you left and went to Indianapolis, I don't remember the guys in the L.A. locker room throwing a parade and raiding your locker and celebrating.
First of all, if they did, when I left, I took my stuff with me. My stuff was already gone.
You had no problem with what the Steelers did yesterday?
I feel like I didn't like that part of it. You know, that's not right. But, that's just something that's immaturity. I mean, you didn't see Ben doing that. I mean, that's immaturity.
Mm. From a contractual standpoint, I think the Pittsburgh Steelers did what they felt was best for them long term. Now, from a team standpoint, publicly, from a media perspective, they handled this all wrong from the jump. Yeah. Week one, they started going in on Le'Veon Bell. Week one. And so if I'm Le'Veon Bell, I'm looking at this like, man, this is how y'all really feel? I'm not coming back there. So I think this played a lot into his ability to just make an easy decision and say, I'm not even coming in. But when you start, your quarterback is saying things, your offensive linemen are saying things about you now to where it's going to make it hard for you to want to come back in there and look them face to face and then earn, well, number one, them respect you and you respect them, it would never work. And this last deal, the whole going in my locker,
yeah.
Like, come on, Marcel. Like, well, we are in that building, and that's like our home.
Yeah.
The locker room is like our own bedroom. That's our own sacred place.
Yeah, that is true.
If you walked in the locker room, the first thing you say if you see somebody, what you doing in my
what
locker?
What you doing in my locker? What you doing in my locker?
What you doing in my locker? What you doing in my locker, man?
Your best friend.
What? You in my locker? It is. So, yeah,
This is a little nasty. It feels personal for the Steelers.
It does feel personal. Some of it feels tongue-in-cheek. I mean, they're smiling. They got social media. They got camera phones. All the things that didn't exist in our certainly not your day.
Whatever.
So, I mean, maybe it's a little bit of the immaturity mixed with the opportunity of like, oh, we're still going to be boys. We're still going to talk. We're going to still hang. But
they're going to be boys.
I think so. Look,
they talked about the man's money this offseason. Big Ben just said, man, I'm glad I ain't got to talk about this no more. Now we're going to loot his locker and put it on tape. But we're going
to
be cool.
You got to look at it through the lens of which they are trying to portray this. There's a millennial out there. There's this existence out there where this is not a nasty divorce. This is more like your main just stop hitting you back. And
nasty to me.
It hurts me too. But hang out with some of these youngsters. They're like, man, they just stopped texting me. I'm like, oh, really? That's it? Yeah, that's how I go now. Like, they break up through text. It's so informal now that we look at it like, hold on, you didn't drive over there, look her in the eye and say it's over. Like, no one does that anymore. No more paper routes. No more milkman. Right. Like, all that
they
is gone.
They just swipe left. They used to swipe right. Now they swipe left and it's over.
The guys in that locker room are touched more than Le'Veon is. When you listen to Big Ben say, I mean, he didn't text. Why you got to even tell me that? he didn't even respond back to my text.
Like you said, those guys are kind of touchy about it. But as Le'Veon, he's like, he's distanced himself from that. But we know this much here. The Steelers have never been a team that's going to overpay their players. They don't. They just don't do it. They're going to pay you what they think is fair. And if you don't go with it, so be it.
We can guarantee, I can guarantee this, and Marcellus, trust me on this. Le'Veon Bell right now is in some booth working on a rap diss track about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Trust me on this. Le'Veon's a rapper. We've seen he put a, he's putting out a diss track over this. I guarantee in the next 2 weeks, this is an ugly divorce. And then the last point, and Eric, I'll start with you first. I just wonder, James Conner's done an amazing job when he thought he was just a placeholder and trying to do as much as he can while Le'Veon was gone before Le'Veon got back. Do you think, in any way, now that the job is actually his, do you think the pressure or it might change his performance, productivity, and energy now that the job is actually his?
No, not at all. I think he always wanted the job. You know, he probably knew he wouldn't have the job as long as Le'Veon is there. I think even for the offensive line, they're going to even block that much more for James Conner, because this is our guy now. You know, he's a downhill runner. We don't have to wait and all that patience stuff. And James Conner's gonna give you his best. So I think this is a great opportunity for him, and he's taking full advantage of it.
Oh, look, from a guy who came into the league in a rotation where I knew it wasn't my job, so every time I went out there, it felt like I was playing for gravy, which I think is some of James Conner's mindset before this moment. And now, oh, this is me, now I'm playing for security. There's a different mindset. There's a different pressure. There's a different expectation. But he has certainly met him to this point. Look at the numbers. The most touchdowns rushing that Le'Veon Bell has ever had is 9. He already has 10. I mean, the most Le'Veon's ever had in a season combined is 11. He's already had 11. So the guy is sitting there playing with house money. I think he'll ride that. This is not Linsanity. This is going to go a lot further.
Yeah, I still think you miss a guy like Le'Veon Bell. Anytime you have to replace a guy with that ability, you will miss that. It's not that you can't replace it and you can't pull from other areas, but that's just the thing. It doesn't take just one guy to replace a guy like Le'Veon Bell. Yeah, is he, James Conner playing outside his mind right now? Of course. But we all know this is how we gauge. Can he sustain that? Will he sustain that? Not just this year, next year, and the year after.
Yeah, when D coordinators get serious, yes. About, it's no longer this joke. Or when Le'Veon's coming back, it's like, oh, you the guy? Okay, we got something for you.
Look, I just think the Steelers have handled this like they won this divorce. And I just don't think they have. I think it's hard to win a divorce. I came up with this last night. I hope and pray that somehow, and I'm not a huge Colts fan, but Indianapolis is my hometown. If he gets to the Colts with Andrew Luck, we're going to see who lasts last.
And Eric Ebron at tight end, who's leading the league at tight end touchdowns. Here's the thing I'm noticing about the Steelers, why they're so happy, is because what did they win with Le'Veon Bell? Think about it. Like, a lot of regular season games, 13-3 last year. Any Super Bowl championships with Le'Veon? I mean, this is how it gets cutthroat upstairs. We can let that ride, y'all, because we have not won it all with this guy. Let's try with someone else.
We're saving $17 million this year. So look at that.
Right.
We're saving $14 million. James Conner is making less than $1 million. That's a big saving. You know, teams are all about money, too. Mm-hmm.
You know what? I've said that about Le'Veon going to the Colts. When Eric went to the Colts, nothing happened. We didn't win a Super Bowl. Nothing happened. No one benefited. Jeff George didn't benefit. I didn't benefit. No one benefited.
Give me something I can slap him. Give me that cone over there.
Later in the show.
Ever wonder how to get the hottest new sneakers, the ones that barely hit shelves? The answer is StockX, a revolutionary new marketplace for buying and selling 100% authentic sneakers, streetwear, watches, and handbags. Millions are already using StockX to find everything after it sells out. From the latest Yeezys to every retro Jordan to the hottest new streetwear from brands like Supreme, Bape, Palace, and Kith. StockX even allows users to buy and sell pre-owned, excellent condition luxury handbags and watches from brands like Louis Vuitton, Chanel, Gucci, Rolex, Omega, Tudor, and more. StockX gives you access to tons of historical price data so you can see exactly how much an item has sold for in the past and how much it's selling for now. Best of all, StockX has removed all the risk from buying and selling online. They provide total anonymity between buyer and seller. StockX is in the middle, so you never have to deal with a random buyer or seller again. And they have experts who verify every item, making sure everything you buy is 100% authentic. Never get burned by fakes again. Go to StockX.com/speak. StockX. Now you know.
Time for a big story. Whitlock and Wiley, Eric Dickerson and Greg Jennings are back. Let's move to tonight's game on Fox between the Packers and the Seahawks, which could go a long way to deciding both teams' fate. Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson have had some epic battles and important games through the years. But this year, both teams are hovering around 500 and searching for answers with glaring holes in both their supporting cast. All right, the question here is, who should have a more hopeful outlook moving forward, Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson? I think it's Aaron Rodgers because I think there's a lot of upheaval in Seattle in terms of, is Pete Carroll there for the long haul? And so I think in Green Bay, Mike McCarthy's die is kind of cast. I think he's going to be finished either at the end of this season or perhaps even during this season. They've already got a new general manager. They were already more aggressive, I think, this offseason. The Green Bay Packers were in terms of acquiring players. They had a good draft. I think the Packers have a clearer vision of the direction they're going, more so than the Seattle Seahawks. So if I were Aaron Rodgers, I'd be a little bit more hopeful.
I'm with the Seahawks. For some of the reasons you said, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I don't feel comfortable in my situation, even if Mike McCarthy is out and the contention between them has certainly been seen and talked about ad nauseum. If I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm like, I got the money. But Scarface told me I get the money and the power. And I don't have any power because in the offseason, you're making personnel moves without checking in with me. You're making coaching hires without at least seeing what my opinion is on these situations. So you're making all these moves, and I'm the franchise quarterback with all this money but no power. We're not pulling in the same direction. I think that's in part why they're so inconsistent, especially offensively. If you're in Seattle, you're looking at it like, hey, man, we're returning back to form. Think about it. They're a rush-first offense right now in terms of they've had three different running backs with over 100 yards this season, number one in rushing yardage this year. And you look at it, that's how they built their team, rushing, playing some smart conservative ball, and then get it on defense. Russell Wilson is having a career year in terms of QB rating. So things are starting to fit under the radar for a team that has played the best team in the NFC, if you want to say that's the Rams, have played them down to the wire two times. I'm looking at Seattle as looking like they're on one accord. They're starting to find their way.
I agree with you, Jason, for once. You know, I think it's Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I'd rather be in Aaron Rodgers' shoes. I mean, I think he's a great quarterback. I think the Packers have done a poor job of putting players around him what he needs. The defense is playing, you know, good this year, but I just feel like they could have done more to help him. When I think about the Seahawks have never recovered from losing that Super Bowl. I know people get tired of talking about it. Mm. I think the players still don't look at Russell Wilson as one of them. You know, when you talk about players, because the fun thing about players is, You like some dogs. You got to have some dogs in your locker room, some real dogs. Yeah. They don't look at Russell Wilson as that guy, like a dog. He's not one of us. He's like, I always say, like an SC guy. You know, he want an SC guy, USC guys. And I think that's where the problem comes in. And you got Pete Carroll who, you know, is it time for him to go? He's 67 years old. I still don't think that team responds to him like they did, you know, years ago. When you first saw Pete Carroll come, let's go 8 years ago in the league. That team loved Pete Carroll. You would see him like, yeah, this is our guy. Now guys walk by him and like, yeah, okay, mm-hmm. And you can't win like that. So for me, I'll go with Aaron Rodgers.
How you think they walk by Mike McCarthy though? If they sonning Pete Carroll, what do you think?
Well, McCarthy gonna probably be out of that.
But
Aaron Rodgers. I like the upside with Aaron Rodgers still. I'll take Aaron.
We gonna keep them on that side.
Okay, there you go.
Two against two.
There you go.
I'm going with the Seattle Seahawks, and for different reasons. Obviously, you got the younger quarterback, and I feel like, to your point, this is their identity. They're running the football. They're excited about where they're headed. They've lost so many pieces, but yet they still find a way to be relative. Mm. And this is who they are. They grind out hard wins. And then you look within the division. What's the easiest way to make the playoffs? You win your division.
Your division game.
They got one team that is a little far out in front of them in their division, in the Los Angeles Rams. And they have some ground to make up. But that's one team. The other two, they cool with them. But you look across, in the NFC North in Green Bay, they're chasing two teams that are in front of them that are better collectively as a whole, offensively and defensively, and they have their coaching situation intact. So, and there's no riff. So you look at all of those things, and I think that the Seattle Seahawks is in a definite better position than the Green Bay Packers.
You know what? I get y'all's point about the running game in Seattle.
Yeah.
But I think it's a bit of a gimmick. And seriously, when you are having to throw an extra offensive tackle out on the field to establish your running game in a league that has gone past crazy, and you believe you have one of the three or four best quarterbacks in the league, Russell Wilson, that's what he's supposed to be. But you have to have some kind of gimmicky offense to run the ball constantly and really kind of protect Russell Wilson. So I get by passer rating, Russell Wilson's having a great year, but I think by these modern standards of what NFL quarterbacks, franchise quarterbacks are supposed to do, I think this is a year of perhaps, I would even go as far as regression for Russell Wilson. I don't think he plays like a franchise quarterback this year.
Whoa, let's go to old school numbers. Touchdowns, the interception, 21-5. He's never had 21 touchdowns after 9 games ever in his career. Like Russell Wilson, it's weird. I get where you're coming from because I felt it too. Had to do a little more research because the eyes were feeling something different. I was seeing something different. But look at this team. It's under the radar. Look, they're a 4-5 team, so they're not with a winning record, and we're not respecting them like we should fully. But Russell Wilson's out there doing some things in the passing game, and they have the running game. So that's a complete offense, no matter how you got to do it with bubble gum and sticks. Defensively, it's right around the top 10 team. It's right on 11. So look, when you lose a Legion of Boom and you still are not in the 20s, you're like 11th in defense. Man, they're starting to make some way here.
And let me say this, like, gimmicky. How is it gimmicky when we're letting you know? We're bringing in an extra offensive you know what time it is. And no gimmick about that. Every team in the National Football League wants to be able to establish the run. They have found a way without gimmicks, letting you know this is how we're going to establish the run.
Stop.
What are you going to do to stop it?
Right now they have. And I give you that, but still, they got that three-back system. You know, I'm not big on that.
Because you're Eric Dickerson.
Exactly.
I mean, who else you going to put in there, Eric?
Can I talk?
No, not Eric Dickerson.
You know, they had Marshawn Lynch. They still looking for that guy, you know, the guy to have. But no one wants to have 3 or 4 backs rotating in because all of a sudden, if I'm on defense, okay, they're bringing him in. We know this is going to probably be a pass. You know, he comes in on passing down. He's a third down guy. Yeah. You want a guy that's the old Seahawks, they ran the football. You knew what their deal was. They're running it, but I agree. It's kind of gimmicky.
You married a one back if you find it, but if you're single, do you not go
three,
on a couple
you got,
of days?
You got three, you got you three. Not, we got an orgy going on the field.
Very quickly, who wins tonight?
Seattle. I got to run with it.
I'm going with Seattle. The Green Bay Packers haven't been able to win on the road all year.
You know, just despite everybody, I'm going with Green Bay.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Aaron Rodgers.
Dinner bet.
2-2.
Dinner bet.
2-2.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Speak for Yourself podcast. We've got some good news. Now through November 26th, you can listen to our show on Fox Sports on SiriusXM Channel 83. This is free in your car, online, and on the SiriusXM app. Use the link in the podcast description and start your free trial today.
All right, welcome back to the show, Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by NBA champion Matt Barnes. Let's move to the NBA, where Draymond Green is expected to return from his one-game suspension tonight, and will take the court alongside Kevin Durant for the first time since their altercation at the end of Monday's loss to the Clippers. Today, Draymond addressed the incident and tried to put the drama to rest.
You know, what happened a few nights ago, you know, Kevin and I spoke. We're moving forward. You know, I am think there's no secret that I am an emotional player. You know, I wear my emotions on my sleeve. I play with that same emotion. You know, sometimes it gets the best of me, and, you know, it doesn't work to my favor. I'm going to live with that, you know, because it works in my favor to the good, as my resume speaks and this team resume speaks, more so than it doesn't. And so I'm never going to change who I am. I'm going to approach the game the same way that I always do. And, you know, like I said, we'll continue to move forward. You know, and I've read a lot about how, is this the end of the run, or is it over, or did I ruin it, or did I force Kevin to leave? You know, at the end of the day, as I've said before, whatever Kevin decided to do, whatever Clay decided to do, whatever who decides to do, you know, we had great years together, and I support everybody wholeheartedly, 100%, because as a man, as a human being, you got the right to do what you want to do with your life, and so I'll never question that. This only makes Kevin, myself, and the rest of my teammates stronger. That's what it's going to do. So, you know, you think you saw something before. Good luck with us now. Like, we're not going to crumble off of an argument. We're going to move forward. So, that's all I got to say. Anybody want to talk about basketball, I'm here. If not, it's been real.
That is fascinating. Good. I got a lot of thoughts on that. Right. But I want to start with Matt, just because you were on this team. You know these guys. Do you think this feud is over?
It's over, and it should have been over already. I think the fact that it's them, that everyone's, you know, and then the media got their hands on it. But, you know, KD never really gave him anything to grab and run with. But more than anything, I mean, like I said, I've been in this locker room. What makes it special is the fact that there's no egos. I love the fact that KD wants the ball at the end of the game. He's the most efficient scorer we've ever seen. I know he had Clay on the right wing. He had someone cutting, someone on the right side. To me, it looked like Draymond was trying to draw the defense in, either kick to Clay or throw it back to KD, and a turnover happened. And then an argument happened. That happens a lot. And like I said, I think the fact that it's them, everyone's making a big deal about it.
You think the feud's over, Marcellus?
Yeah, I think it's over. I heard Mark Jackson talking about it yesterday. All it takes is one player to take ownership. Even if you're a tough guy, even if you just don't want to be that guy, even if you're Draymond, that's why they created the phrase, my bad, for the tough guys who don't want to say, I'm sorry, but you still get it out in the same way. And I look at this like, if you're Kevin Durant, I'm not a female dog, so that doesn't stick to me, that doesn't land. And I didn't give you, like Matt said, anything to run with. So this has to end right now, because these two guys are still trying to achieve something together as a collective. So, yeah, I think it's behind
them. I do believe the feud is over.
Okay.
But I also think, to me, when I listen to Draymond, I hear that group is also over, that this is
yes,
it.
I heard
we
that.
We are going, this year, we're going to go out, win this last championship, and then we're breaking up. The Jackson 5 is over. Mm-hmm. Michael's going to go sing on his own. Mm. Jermaine's going to do a solo career, perhaps.
One single, though. Tell me if I'm dreaming.
And so, I mean, that's what I heard is feud is over, but so is this relationship when this season's over. We're going to give our best this year. Watch out. We're going to be great. Yeah. We all know this is it. This is I forget the name of the Jacksons' last tour when they did their last all tour.
This but is it?
But that's what it sounds like to me, that this is it.
I wouldn't say that he's saying this is it. I think he's saying that he respects the fact that there's a lot of money out there. And people at the end of the day, like, they want money. You know, I know that KD is definitely capitalizing off the court in Golden State. I know Clay is doing a lot of stuff too. So if Golden State's owners want to go on the luxury tax tremendously and re-sign the team that they want to re-sign and give them the money they feel like they deserve, they can do it. But like they said, there's power of the money. There's some spots that look good for a couple guys. So it's going to come down to what they want to do at the end of the day.
Yeah, what I heard was a guy who realizes who he is and where he is. So when you get to that level of status, that stature, you're Draymond Green, you're a superstar in this game, guess what you have to do? You have to be proactive. You have to think ahead. You have to have foresight. And a lot of people are going to look at this moment, if Kevin Durant goes out in free agency, says, that was the issue. That was the moment. And I think Draymond is like, let me control narrative, because you got to do that. You go upstairs right now at Fox, there's some people talking about the fall of 2020. You and I are just trying to get through Thursday, right? Like, you got to think way ahead when you got so much on the line. I think Draymond's just saying, in case I'm letting y'all know this is not because of me.
You know, the thing that Draymond didn't hear him respond to today was, I wonder how he felt about the one-game suspension. I didn't like it. Unless there were punches thrown, why are you suspending a man over words? I don't get it. And that, to me, is the pampering of Kevin Durant and them trying to be all in on retaining Kevin Durant. But I also like your point, Matt, about money. And how much can four guys keep slicing up the money in Golden State? And maybe in Draymond, it affects his pocketbook if all four of them stay together. And maybe, again, this goes down to Michael Jackson or whatever group. Eventually they figure out, you know, I can make more solo than I can. Ice Cube could make more solo than he could with N.W.A.
Yes, he could.
And maybe that's the decision. That's what, again, I felt like I heard is like, hey, man, it's about time to go out and start doing these solo tours again. There's more money to be made.
Like I said, it just depends. You know what I mean? It depends. All I know is this is a great group, and what makes them so special is their communication and their unity and the chemistry they have. That's why when you build all these teams and put all these players together, they never seem to match up with the Warriors, because the Warriors will beat them with chemistry. And I know that they're going to go above and beyond the call of duty now just to prove that this is something that will be swept under the rug. They're definitely going to bring them tighter. And we all know they're going to be a monster, and they're going to be there at the end.
Yeah. I think it's poetic, though, that the chemistry was established before KD got there, and the chemistry could be the issue that gets him out, because Draymond didn't show that same mindset of the chemistry that got him this far. Like, calling him a B, I agree with a suspension. You know why? Look, I'm not going to go into physical versus mental abuse, but I certainly know that if you call someone something, it triggers physical reactions, physical consequences. So that's why you got to say, we stay within this respectful box. That box could be wide, lots of latitude. You could say a lot of stuff about a lot of players in today's game, but there are boundaries, because if not, we go past that point, we going to get physical.
But Marcellus, I'm one of the old school idiots, I guess. And I would be a coach that occasionally, like, you know what? If they got to throw some hands to work this out, let them throw some hands. That's what they did in football. Sometimes we'd be in two-a-day practice or whatever. It's like, hey, man, we need a fight to get everybody, get it out of your system.
In
blah,
basketball,
blah, blah.
Too. Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Steve Kerr. Like, we've heard this.
It's happened a lot. I mean, people fight. People get in arguments all the time. I mean, at the end of the day, they're brothers. You know what I mean? So, this is not, like I said, this is only blowing up because they're at the top and people want to try to find any kind of chink in their armor to be like, oh, that's the reason, or it's his fault. At the end of the day, they're going to, you know, stay healthy, run through this season, see if they win a championship. And then, you know, I think Draymond is saying, I respect whatever move you need to make after that. But he's not going to be the reason. This little argument here in November is not going to be the reason why he leaves in July, if he does.
I don't think it'll be the reason he leaves. But the more I talk this through and think about it, I believe the feud is over with for now, but the issues are still there.
Well, KD walked off and a lot of lip readers said, that's why I'm out, when he was on the court. Did you see that?
But a lot of things are said in the heat of passion, and he was in the heat of the passion right there, too. He was in the heat of the moment, so he's probably thinking, like, you know, F this, you know? But he's just saying it. Just like if Draymond says something he should have said, he said it because he was in the heat of the moment. And that kind of stuff happens. There's no excuse for whatever, you know, name calling, whatever.
Oh,
it is,
Matt,
what it is.
Matt, hold on.
But I think they're in the heat of the moment. You say a lot of
Matt,
things in the heat of the moment.
Drunk words are sober thoughts, right?
There
and
you
heated,
go.
And heated
somewhat,
words
somewhat,
are
somewhat,
calm thoughts.
Somewhat,
no?
Somewhat, somewhat.
No, no, look. When your girl says I'm out and then she walks it back, it's going to rear its ugly head at some point.
But keep in mind, though, if they do lose someone, that's going to open up money to keep Boogie. You know what I mean? So if they
Gonna reload this thing.
Yeah, to me, like, you know, it was only a matter of time till the Lakers rebuild. I think that, you know, the Warriors are this new generation and how franchises are run and done. And if they happen to lose a couple stars here and there, people want to go play in Golden State because not only the team and the culture, but the off-the-court stuff in Silicon Valley and San Francisco and the tech push. Like, there's a lot more to basketball. Like, there's a lot more to being a Laker now. There's so much business off the court here. There's a lot of business off the court in the Bay. So, people, it's a destination now. So, if they happen to lose someone, you know, personally, I'm a fan. I don't want to see them do it. But there's going to be people in the wings ready to resign.
Great point. Great job, Matt. Time to put on our thinking caps. We take a deeper look into the world of sports. All right, we're joined by two idiots, Clay Travis and Todd
Stars.
Furman. Oh, I'm sorry.
Todd Rogers right there says stars, Jason. We're going to have to work with you a little bit
two
in time.
Two stars from Lock It In. I don't know how I didn't get Rachel Bonetta. I asked for Rachel Bonetta. Somehow I get stuck with Clay here. Travis
yes.
and Todd Furman from Lock It In. You guys know I'm a journalist. Marcellus here, an Ivy League grad from Columbia.
You.
He thinks he's smarter than everybody else. Darnell, bring in Marcellus's cap.
Oh, huh?
Cap and gown. We got the gown.
Oh,
cap
appreciate
on.
You.
Clay, I know you went to Vanderbilt, the Ivy League of the South. Where'd you go? Wesleyan?
Wesleyan University. I share an alma mater with Bill Belichick. I like to think I'm much more personable. I'm never going to win any Super Bowls, but that's neither here nor there.
Patriot right. way.
Yeah, just do your job today, both of you. All right, all right, let's move to the NFL, where this year's MVP race has turned into a tale of two quarterbacks with young gun Patrick Mahomes and old man Drew Brees running away as favorites to win the award. While Mahomes is taking the league by storm and is having a historical year, Brees is once again having a Drew Brees-like year. And while the Saints quarterback has accomplished just about everything in his NFL career, he still never won the MVP award. And I got to thinking about this. I'm a huge Patrick Mahomes fan. I'm a Kansas City Chiefs fan. Spent 16 years in Kansas City making my name. I think Patrick Mahomes is the MVP. He's having the best year. Yeah. But then I got to thinking about Drew Brees is going to leave this earth or this career without being the MVP of the league. Yeah. I don't think the media and voters and people are going to let that happen. I think if Drew Brees keeps playing the way he is and Patrick Mahomes keeps playing the way he is, they're going to give the MVP award to Drew Brees as a lifetime achievement award. And part of me actually kind of agrees with it and thinks Mahomes will win it later and they need to give Drew Brees an MVP award.
No, you're not going to take the beauty of my sport away, which is this meritocracy, this merit-based world where we don't care what your story is. We don't care your likeness. We don't care your background. We don't care your size. We only care if you're putting your hand in here and you're saying, may the best man wins. That's what sports is built on. And it is not about story. It is not about you getting a Lifetime Achievement Award if you're Drew Brees. Be a singer or an actor. Go get a Grammy or Oscar. They do that over there. In sports, when you get between the white lines, you got to go get this and earn this in the moment of truth. I'm looking at Patrick Mahomes, and he's just putting up better numbers. He's the Usain Bolt in this race. And I'm looking at Drew Brees like, you are killing it. You are amazing. But you're Tyson Gay. And for those who don't know who Tyson Gay is, he's a perennial second placer. And he is amazing. He has actually never set the world record, but has run world record times. But it just continues to skip over him because in the years where he's amazing, there's always someone better, and that's Patrick Mahomes.
Well, if you're going to talk to a perennial second placer, that's where Clay comes in. So he should get the chance to try and lead this dialogue, and then we can tell him why he's wrong like we do every day right after you guys
Here's
are out
there. I loved everything you said. You're completely wrong. Because Drew Brees is actually statistically better than Patrick Mahomes. Right now, Drew Brees is on pace to post the highest quarterback rating in the history of the NFL. The two guys who won it before him and set the records, MVPs. 77% completion percentage. What Drew Brees is doing on the field right now, it's rare we can say this. We've never seen it happen before. And I think the role that the Saints are on right now offensively is unlike anything we have seen in a very long time, too. I think Drew Brees, you don't even have to give him the Lifetime Achievement Award, although I do think it's crazy that at 39 he's never won it. First ballot NFL Hall of Famer. He is going to win it outright because his data and his stats all support the fact that he's not number two, much like me. He's number one.
Well, that's a great story, Clay, but if you look at the way the odds have moved, odds makers believe Patrick Mahomes, it's his award to lose at this juncture of the season, whether it's narrative, whether it's statistical performance, or what he's meant. Just look at how much more proficient this Chiefs offense has been with Mahomes under center than what it was with Alex Smith. Meanwhile, we look at Drew Brees. It's rinse and repeat. He continues to put up gaudy numbers, and while you're spot on, these are better numbers than we've seen any
that have
in his
ever
career,
existed in the history
that's
of
fine.
Football.
But Mahomes is poised to break all sorts of records, touchdown passes, yardage, you name it. He is on pace to put together maybe the single greatest season we could see from the quarterback position, and unlike like this, well, he's going to have a chance to win it at some other point in his career. What happens if he goes out game three next year and something happens and he never gets there again? I think you have to reward him for his on-field performance this year. And while it's tough for Drew Brees, he's got a Super Bowl ring he'll be just fine with. Patrick Mahomes should be the MVP if we're talking about those two, because you won't even let me throw Todd Gurley into this discussion.
We're not going to talk about running back. I'm going to end it right here. You know what Patrick Mahomes does? He puts ketchup on his mac and cheese. I'm sorry.
What? What's
I'm sorry. You hear about that? Oh, yeah. No.
If that's bad. Hell, you act like it's a bad thing.
That is unacceptable.
I put ketchup on my tacos. Let's go to war, baby.
I'm a ketchup guy. Yes. I don't like going overseas because they don't ever have enough ketchup on the table, right? I want ketchup everywhere. Can't put ketchup on the mac and cheese. Indefensible. That seals it.
I want to narrow the conversation a little bit more just about why I think narrative is going to win out for Drew Brees. And again, I think as this season goes on and he continues on this pace and people start just really focusing in on 39-year-old Drew Brees, Tom Brady's kind of falling off a slight bit, and Drew Brees being a better story. And when people start digging in, they're going to realize. And it took me a second. I thought about this earlier in the year. I was like, who is the modern-day Walter Payton? Who is the guy that everybody feels good about? If you gave Drew Brees the nickname Sweetness, people, oh, that kind of makes sense. The way he represents New Orleans, the way the unblemished character, you know, from the outside, and then who could, because I used to look at the patch that they have Walter Payton, and I thought about whose image could they put to as man of the year 30 years from now if they moved on from Walter Payton? I think it would be Drew Brees. And I think you got to give him this MVP just to build out his resume, because he is that guy. He's the modern day Walter Payton.
Well, the story sounds like, as I'm interpreting it, sounds like sustained excellence versus peak performance. Sounds like a Tim Duncan, Kobe Bryant argument of some regard, because in a moment's time, Patrick Mahomes has supplanted OBJ as the most watched NFL player. Like, I'm fascinated with him. I'm a Chargers fan, former Charger player, and this Monday night, I am itching to see, because of the move to L.A., Patrick Mahomes once again. I already saw him play here in L.A. first week of the season. The guy is riveting. I think that's part of the sizzle that you have to respect. That's going to go a little farther than just, are you great for the brand? He's actually bringing viewers in droves in a different respect than even Drew Brees can, because of that sustained effort.
How much better do Mahomes' numbers have to be for voters? Like, what does he have to do to distance himself? Because there's no doubt, if it's a coin flip and they can pick between those two, Drew Brees is going to get the nod if it's a dead heat. But does Mahomes have to throw for 15 more touchdown passes or break a handful more records for him to feel comfortable when the regular season comes to an end that he's put his best foot forward and deserves fair consideration to be the MVP?
I think he's going to need a better record. His team's going to need a better record. They're going to have to win more games than the Saints.
I think Whitlock is right about who votes here. It's writers. And what do writers do all day long, every day? We try to make sense of chaos and find a story that fits all of the factual evidence, right? And I think ultimately MVPs are about, you like the idea of meritocracy. I love that idea. I think ultimately they are the meritocracy that allows us to tell the best story. Because everybody wants to be able to write there on their typewriter, sit down on their laptops, and be able to craft a story about the season. Drew Brees at 39 posting the best year he's ever had statistically in his career, and also the best year that anybody's ever had statistically in the course of the NFL. That's a damn good lead. That's going to play well on the front page of the sports section. That's going to play well on the website. I think that's in the back of their mind what writers end up doing. They write the best story.
That story doesn't have enough contrast, because if you start to compare him in a relative scope to his own performances, there's not a great distance. I mean, even though this will be historical, you start to look at Drew Brees like, oh, didn't he have a 72% completion percentage before? Like, you start to measure him against himself, and I think that story starts to eat itself versus Patrick Mahomes. Are you kidding me?
That's the LeBron factor, right? LeBron should have been the MVP for a decade straight, but he's not competing against the rest of the NBA. He's competing against himself. The difference, I would say, here is Brees has never won. If he'd won it when he was 29, I think people would say, ah, he got it. Let's go to the new guy instead. I think the storyline, Whitlock's right here. Ultimately, we want new, and we want Drew Brees
but
here.
I'll just say this. I can write a storyline for Patrick Mahomes that's very compelling.
Yes.
And I think as this, we got 6-7 weeks left in this regular season, I think people are going to get here eventually. Patrick Mahomes represents something unique and great as well. I realize that Cam Newton won the MVP.
Yeah.
But at no time, even when he won the MVP, I don't think people thought Cam Newton's the best quarterback in the NFL. Mm. They thought he was the MVP. This is the first time, I think, perhaps in the history of the NFL, there will be a black kid that everybody will point to, that's the best quarterback in the NFL. Mm. I think that's a really compelling story.
That's true.
Unless
Russell Wilson, you want to count him. If he had thrown that touchdown pass and it hadn't gotten picked off two straight Super Bowls, I think maybe Russell Wilson would have stepped into that arena. But I agree with you that in general, he's playing tonight.
Yeah.
I think Russell Wilson, probably the less of all of the top 10 quarterbacks, the least respected and talked about.
No, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you look at the defense he had. They got all the headlines in Seattle. Russell Wilson became an afterthought for what he had to do. Wilson's performances have been better the last couple of years as the Legion of Boom continues to decline, and it's a no-name defense where he's had to shoulder more of the responsibilities this year, notwithstanding with the ground game. But going back to the Lifetime Achievement Award, doesn't it create a compelling argument for journalists to go, this is the face of the game going forward? What better way than to anoint him that guy with an MVP award when he's earned it? And you go, Drew Brees, what you've done for the sport is great. There's no doubt everything he meant to the city of New Orleans and off field. But you can put him out to pasture. All of a sudden, we move the mantle from the Drew Brees, the Tom Brady's of the world. Patrick Mahomes, you're our guy, and we're now going to market you as the face of the NFL.
Hell of a story. Yeah. And you know what it'll be like? I'll go back to Walter Payton. When Walter Payton didn't score a touchdown in that damn Super Bowl, that was ridiculous. He deserved that,
yeah.
And Mike Ditka stole it from him. And he left without it. Maybe Drew Brees leaves without an MVP. Very quickly, on a gambling note, who would you bet on to win the MVP?
I think Drew Brees, because I think the story angle. But Furman may like Patrick Mahomes. He's a favorite.
I actually agree. I think from a value standpoint, where the number sits right now, Drew Brees makes more sense. Because all of this stuff you do have to factor in. On-field performance is one thing. That narrative may be too hard for Mahomes to overcome. Because if he has one game where he falters on a big stage, they're going to look for a reason to pull the chair out from under him. And I'll give the award to Drew Brees if they can.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Great job on Locking In. Eric Dickerson and Greg Jennings are back. Let's return to the NFL, where the Ravens are preparing for a huge showdown with the Bengals, but apparently still don't know who their starting quarterback will be. With Joe Flacco's status up in the air with a hip injury, Lamar Jackson was taking first-team reps in practice and says he's very prepared to start, but reportedly Lamar was sidelined at practice today by a stomach issue, and Robert Griffin III took the snaps today. A stomach, you're this close to starting an NFL game, and now you have a tummy ache?
Well, you can't have a tummy ache? You can't have a stomach ache.
You're this close to starting an NFL game.
Well, you got bad guts.
So, we got bathrooms. Go handle that. Come back.
A tummy ache?
Eric, that sounds like the back injury, which is the head and the headache. That sounds like somebody don't want this or somebody doesn't want him to want this for exposure purposes, right?
They need to go with RG3.
Yeah.
And then if RG3 plays poorly, then put Lamar out there. You put Lamar out there as a starter, expectations and all that go through the roof. Run RG3 out there. I tip my hat to John Harbaugh and the Baltimore organization. They're putting a nice story together. Lamar had a tummy ache, and we gave him they said tummy ache, and they gave him some milk of magnesia, I think is what my mother used to give me, or Pepto-Bismol or something.
Pepto-Bismol.
Some Sprite. You remember your
mom giving me
a little Sprite on that,
seven
baby?
Take some of this Tussin.
Yes.
I would put him out there. Look,
as the starter.
Yeah, you know why? Because this is a no report card performance that I'm looking at. I'm not grading you.
Love those. I love those.
I'm not grading you.
Even all Fs and no big deal.
You're going to feel the heat from the fans. If you don't perform, you're going to hear from the media, but you're not getting graded internally. We know who you are. We know you're a project. We know you need help with your mechanics. We know that you are still trying to figure out the technical aspects of playing quarterback. However, I got to see what's in that bottle, because I know there's some lightning in that bottle, and I want to unleash it for everyone to see in doses, not necessarily in fullness, because this is a team that Joe Flacco wasn't able to inspire consistently. So why would you feel that weight if you go out there, Lamar Jackson? I say, hey, I'm going out there, no report card. Let's see what I got.
No, I don't think so. I mean, Ozzie Smith I told you before, I said before on the
Ozzie
show.
Newsom.
I mean, Ozzie Newsom likes him. Hall of Famer Ozzie Newsom really likes him. And he says a project. He says, right, because I asked him, I said, can he play in the National? He said, Eric, I said, I'm telling you, he can play. He's going to be a really good quarterback, but he's a project. You don't want to get him out there and get him. Most thing about football, you know this, y'all play, it's confidence.
Yeah.
When you lose your confidence, you've lost everything. And sometimes it only takes one game. I mean, because you know one thing? The other team, they don't care if there ain't no report card out there. They're going to be hitting him. And I just feel like, you know, you start RG3. He's played before. You know, he's starting in the NFL. You put him out there. Mm. And if he doesn't work, then you go him out there with his tummy ache.
My tummy better.
I got to ask myself this, and you, when have you ever stepped on the football field and there has been no report card?
I don't know where you got. I got drafted second round. Buffalo Bills, Bruce Smith's there, Phil Hansen. They were like, Wiley, just go out there and just keep learning. I'm a small school player. Keep learning the game. I wasn't getting graded, because if I was getting graded, I wouldn't have been in the league. I was not playing well.
I was a second round guy,
okay,
too.
Okay, so you know.
And I know, but I mean, every time I stepped on the field, they were evaluating me.
Yes, but they also didn't give you the same assessment and consequences of that evaluation, meaning we can protect some guys. I came in with Pat Williams. Pat Williams was undrafted, and Pat Williams was balling. And we were looking at it like, golly, I'm a second rounder. He better than me. But then it came to cutting time. They were looking to get rid of Pat. Why? We ain't got much invested in him, right? It. When you got a lot invested in the first rounder, you know how many times he's going to be allowed to fail before we go out there and give him a real report card? That's all I'm saying. And he's going to have grace.
I got you. Yeah. In that instance, for me, you still don't put him out there. You just don't put, because even with no report card or no evaluation, however you want to word it, you're still going to your point, exude either confidence or the lack of confidence pending what transpires. Mm. And this is a Baltimore Ravens football team that still has a chance to slide into the playoffs. So why would you put in a guy who you feel like, okay, he's a work in progress. Does he give us the best chance to win? Absolutely not. And if that is the answer that I have, then RG3 is that guy, because he allows you to open up your entire playbook, run, pass, and everything else, and then you can move forward with that. But I would not put him out there.
You know, like the old school way, you know, when I came in the league, a quarterback wouldn't get on the field maybe for 3 years. It wasn't a big deal. It really wasn't. Now they're rushing quarterback. It's like when – almost like, this is to me, is like a Cordell Stewart. You know, don't rush him out there. I mean, let him develop to be that guy that you want him to be. He's a first-round draft pick. You don't want to ruin your first-round draft pick, because it can happen so easily.
I just think the comments I've heard from his teammates don't inspire a lot of confidence in me, that they feel like he's ready. I think when I've listened to their receivers talk about Flacco, and, you know, it's like, oh, we're, or when they talk about Lamar, it's about, well, it'll be interesting to see what he can do, as opposed to, man, I can't wait till he gets out there. He's done this X, Y, and Z. This kid's not ready. And even with no report card, you do, when you sit him out there, you start setting expectations.
Yeah, that's
for him, for the fans, for everybody else. And keep this guy in protective glass again. You throw him out there after RG3 makes a mess, now no one cares.
You made a great point there, because you said, I don't hear the teammates chirping. Yeah. And with Patrick Mahomes this offseason, all you heard was chirp, chirp, chirp. And I was like, who is this Patrick Mahomes dude? And week one, we found out, right? So that is a contrast to
Let
it.
Let me just say this about Patrick. Alex Smith was balling out last year.
Right.
And they were still chirping. Alex Smith was balling out in the MVP conversation. Man, you got to see what Patrick Mahomes is doing.
Hold on. Baker Mayfield, the Heisman Trophy winner, was at the same school as Patrick Mahomes. Coach was like, you can transfer. Baker, we good at that position. This dude has been the Don Donna for a while.
My favorite segment, antisocial.
Stop lying to people.
I love it. It is. I get to get use my Twitter off. Yeah.
No notes on that paper. How is it your favorite segment?
I don't need notes, man. I got a sharp mind.
I see you.
All right, our social media manager's here, Darnell Smith.
What up?
Overfed.
What up?
Overfed had two ribeye steaks last night.
Two ribeye? You must have been paying.
Yeah.
And you know it.
Like, I got to have this. Dude, we had like 3,000 pounds of beef at the Palms last night. Everybody over 280. Five of us, everybody over 280. The Palm was very happy with us
last
night.
Good. I was very happy. Like, yeah. Three words. Nice.
Yes, sir.
All right, Darnell, what's popping on the Twitter streets?
Yeah, we're going to start with last night's Lakers game. Mm-hmm. Aside from LeBron's big night, everyone's talking about Rajon Rondo's injury, which will keep him sidelined for a few weeks. Mm. Lonzo Ball fans took over NBA Twitter after the news broke and shared their excitement with a bunch of classic gifts. We got the all-timer Alonzo Mourning Shrug. We got some Newman from Seinfeld. Mm. And then my favorite, The Undertaker coming back from the dead. This seems like a golden opportunity for Lonzo to finally break through. Is this his last chance to finally prove it with the Lakers?
Last chance? No. He's a first-round pick, second pick overall in the draft.
Yeah.
You know, and he's been decent this year to good. Last chance? No. I it's a good chance for him to come in and really establish a bond with LeBron James. It's an awesome opportunity for
that. This is just clout chasing, as the kids say it now. Like, you mentioned Lonzo's name, and electricity comes from whatever you say, whether it's your tweet, whether it's your article, whatever. No shots at Lonzo. Mark Jackson was saying it during the game. He's like, it's unfair to both guys for them not to declare who's the man out of those two, Rondo and Lonzo. I guess the universe had its say. It says, look, it's Lonzo. And Lonzo's pace of play, the way he can still see the floor, the way that he can move, you got to respect this guy. Yeah, man.
I'm not even going to take any cheap shots. I'm going to let you have that. You can praise Lonzo all you want. I'm not taking
any. Oh, here you go.
I'm not saying nothing.
Why you say that then?
Darnell, what's
that? That felt cheap.
I'm not saying.
All right, moving on to my man, Zion Williamson,
who
balled out last night. And everyone on Twitter is buzzing about a couple of his monster dunks. I mean, check these out. He's off 2 feet, chin over the rim, everything. Zion's been a beast this year, and one basketball writer has an interesting comparison for him. J.J. Watt is 6'5", 289 pounds. Zion Williamson is 6'6", 285 pounds. Would Zion be a better football player than J.J. Watt would be a basketball player?
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a good question, because people will easily think like, oh, of course Zion Williams can play football.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, there's no of course to it.
No.
Not everybody has the heart.
Does he have that issue right here? Do you got that little switch in your head where you're a little cray-cray?
Yeah.
You got to be a little cray-cray to play football. That athletic base, though, that athleticism would be beyond next level in our game. We only seen it maybe Julius Peppers with that kind of size and dimension. Zion will be better than J.J. Watt in basketball.
By far. That's probably because J.J.'s a terrible basketball player. I hate that. Yeah, is that a stereotype? My stereotype.
Stereo. Turn the stereo up.
Let me be perfectly clear. I'm not 100% convinced this dude could play football, man, because everybody thinks they can do that.
Right? Did y'all see the clip of him throwing a football like 70 to 80 yards?
Was there a pass rush? Did anybody hit him?
Hold on.
I look real good throwing the ball just out of the front yard.
Hey, watch this, Willock. Watch this video. Look at this, Willock, from standstill.
Yeah.
All right, look out. People in the parking lot, duck. Here it comes.
Okay.
Blah!
I want to see that same replay with you chasing after him, Marcel.
I wouldn't catch him. He's faster, he's bigger, he's stronger. He's been in the talent line too long. Hey, LeBron could have played any sport, and no one chooses football. Football chooses you. Hey, Zion, stay dribbling, bro.
I chose football. I don't know if he got the heart for it.
You don't need the heart.
What's next, Darnell?
You ain't got the heart.
You ain't got the heart. That's where they all go to. Right. They go to.
All right, man. We're like moving back to your boy, Patrick Mahomes, who's getting ready for his big game against the Rams on Monday night. But a recent interview actually had some people questioning the QB. Mahomes admitted to putting ketchup on his steak, and Twitter absolutely freaked out about it. All right, Willock. You were cool with the Mahomes video game habit yesterday.
Yeah.
But did he go too far right here?
Look, I don't question Patrick Mahomes. And you know, it's one of the things, they call this show Speak for Yourself. I wanted to call it Eat for Yourself. And if this is the way the man gets down eating,
thank you.
Why am I complaining about it?
Exactly. I never understood why people look at you side-eyed based on the way I want to digest my food. I remember the first time I put sugar and butter on my grits. People were like, what you doing putting sugar and butter on your grits? I was like, about to eat them if you shut up. I put ketchup on my tacos. What you doing putting ketchup on your tacos?
Now, you tripping right there. That's disgusting.
Why is it disgusting? Do you like ketchup?
Yes. You like tacos?
Do you like tacos?
Yes.
You don't like them together?
Get some salsa, some Taco Bell.
I'm just saying, have you tried them ghetto tacos with that orange drip and that ketchup?
Man, you a nasty something, boy.
Let me say this, though. Let me say this.
What?
Darnell ordered his steak well done last night.
Oh, get up.
Sent me through the roof.
Medium well.
Through the roof, people.
Medium well.
Medium well done?
Anytime you use the word well and done when you're talking about a high-end steak.
You know where I'm from. We're like, I used to high-end steaks.
So I get it.
That's what we know.
A pork steak in Nottingham Village, get it well done. That's how we did it. That's how you did it.
Yes, sir.
But at the Palm?
Yeah.
Medium to medium rare, bro. Right.
Please tell me he asked for some A1 to finish the ghetto.
No, I wouldn't allow it.
I wouldn't allow it. She got some ketchup. She got some ketchup, huh?
Bro, oh,
all right. Last but not least.
Yeah, all right, man. Watching the herd this morning, our guy Kyler was talking about Cam Newton and had an interesting point on why he think he's matured. Take a listen.
This is kind of mature. I think you kind of move into wine. It's a sophisticated alcohol. It's an academic alcohol. This shows the growth. It's a growth. He's not out doing, you know, he's not doing tequila shots with the football players.
Jager bombs.
No, he's out at his family. He's having a glass of wine with his beautiful wife. I like it.
Y'all agree with Colin that this is a sign of maturity?
No. I think it's a sign of elitism. You know,
yeah.
Look, I keep wine at my house, but I'm not really a wine drinker. I do it for other people or whatever. But I don't think a sign of maturity. He's an elite now. He's drinking wine and smoking cigars.
Yeah,
you know.
Right, say it.
I'd rather be with my boys still drinking, you know. Mm-hmm. I drink tequila.
I see.
But if somebody drink, you know, Hennessy or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Wine.
I mean, first of all, people only drink wine because they hear it makes you look better, sound better, more sophisticated. It doesn't taste better.
It
ain't even good for your body. Like you know what's good for your body? A straight tequila shot. No carbs. Just hit that tequila shot, and I'm getting all effect. Like, I'm getting pure effect as soon as I take a tequila shot.
Casa Dragones. Remember when I turned you on
Dragones,
to that?
Casa Dragones. Woo, that got me here.
Cowherd.
Cowherd.
This is all for you, Cowherd.
I hydrate.
All right. Great job, Darnell. All right, welcome back to the show. Approval ratings time. Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about Le'Veon Bell.
Who was that?
What are you throwing at me? What are you doing?
Hey, man, I was at the Lakers game last night. I ran into LeVar Ball. He told me say what's up to his boy Snacks.
get him.
Oh, Chef Boyardee over here, huh?
Hey, well, don't worry about it, all right?
Boyardee.
Don't worry about it. Hey, I got me a job over here, Plan B, okay?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, boy, I'll be cooking it in the crock pot. You know what I'm saying?
We got to move on and talk about Le'Veon Bell.
Do you put ketchup on your tacos when you cook it?
No, Marcellus.
Oh, you don't know how to cook.
That's nasty.
You don't know how to cook,
all right. Let's see a highlight from earlier in the show, us talking about Le'Veon Bell.
That's nasty.
All right, here's the thing about nasty divorces. No one looks good. No one really wins. I don't think the Steelers are going to benefit from this divorce. Bell's contract dispute and long holdout served as motivation for the Steelers.
There's this existence out there where this is not a nasty divorce. This is more like your main just stopped hitting you back. And
nasty to me.
It hurts me too. But it's so informal now that we look at it like, hold on, you didn't drive over there, look her in the eye and say it's over? Like all that
they
is gone.
They just swiped left. They used to swipe right, now they swipe left and it's over. All right, Uncle Jimmy, what'd you think about our conversation about Le'Veon Bell and nasty divorces?
Once again, there you go, running your mouth about something you don't know.
Say that again.
What don't I know?
Marriage. Man, let me explain something to you, man. How the hell, how can you talk about a divorce? What do you know about a divorce?
Commitment.
Let me tell you something, man. I've been divorced 5 times. Here to tell you, them has been 5 of the best years of my life. 5 of the best times I've ever had in my life.
Only thing I know about is Aunt Joyce. You've been divorced five times.
What the hell wrong with you, nephew?
Aunt Joyce? What happened to Aunt Joyce?
What the hell wrong with you?
I don't know about these other four wives.
Wait, something wrong with Aunt Joyce.
Out of my personal business. Look, man, it's back.
Is that why you working so much? Because you got all the divorce money you got
to
get?
Can we get back to what the hell we was talking about?
Okay.
All right, go ahead. What's your take
on it? Man, my point is just real simple. It's like this, man. You say you can't know. Hey, man, are you telling me that Tina Turner didn't profit from her divorce?
In many ways, I think.
Yes,
I think
are you telling me that Cher didn't profit from her divorce with Sonny?
Got that one? That's two for two.
Where the hell is Sonny's career at now? Where he at? He ain't even on Dancing with the Stars no more.
That's because he's dead.
I'm about to say.
Rest my case.
Anybody from the 90s?
I rest my case. I mean, you man, got any? Look, man, all I'm trying to tell y'all is the Pittsburgh Steelers going to win this deal. They're going to win in this divorce. Marcellus, Le'Veon is a Mercedes.
All right.
With
all right.
260,000 miles on it.
That's the one you
never
drive.
Had an oil change.
You know
all
that.
All of the lights on the head, all of the lights in the dashboard
check,
come on.
Check engine on, huh?
Everything. It ain't supposed to look like that, Le'Veon. They done ran you into the dirt. We know you a Mercedes. Mercedes don't go in the tractor pool, Le'Veon.
Wow.
You
he
do
is
know
not
that these NFL players check the Carfax, Le'Veon.
No, he is not. You leave that boy alone. He actually said, I'm not going on that cross-country trip with y'all. I'm going to stay here so I don't put those miles on me. That's who Le'Veon is.
262,000. And ain't never had an oil change. You know how we do.
I do.
That's
and
true.
He went to the Steelers talking about, man, I want Blue Book. You get Black Book.
Please.
All right, hold on. Wait, we got
to
get to the approval rating.
I need to know
rating.
About Ain't Joyce. What happened, man? All right.
We got to get to the approval rating.
I'm sorry. Ain't Joyce.
All right, listen.
Come on, man.
I got Le'Veon at a 58. I'm sorry. Previously, I had him at a 70.
58?
But, yeah, he's lost a lot of points. All-time greatness, I'm going to keep it 21. Character, 12. He's been suspended. He's had problems. Authenticity, I'm going up.
Man, what are you talking about?
This holdout, 25 authenticity. But job performance is a zero, Marcellus.
How?
Availability is the number one ability.
Yeah.
He's not available. Zero job performance.
He's available when he wants to. You got to check his Palm Pilot. And guess what? It's next year when he has that contract. You can't have his job performance at a donut when his value's that high. Give him a real value at job performance. That is a 21. Now, I brought it down.
He's not playing.
He ain't playing for a good reason because they ain't paying. That's why he ain't playing. He's still going to be there when it counts. 21 in all-time greatness. Character, 18. Brought that down just a notch. Didn't think that this was a consistent message that he was out there saying. And I give him authenticity, 23. Hey, man, whatever you are, you believe in you, and I respect that thoroughly. You are a GOAT in my mind. You may be a modern-day player's pioneer in terms of how you want to show and earn your value.
All the players give it up to him.
Yeah, all the players.
The man hasn't played. How can his job perform? He doesn't have 1 yard.
How do you diminish his job performance?
He ain't towards Achilles.
Yeah.